You're listening to The Science of Storytelling, presented by Pressboard, a show about marketing, media, and the people making it happen. Your host is Jared Grimm.
On today's Science of Storytelling episode, I'm chatting with Patty Oppenheimer. Patty is the director of custom content at Cranes New York. Patty and I discuss the challenges and opportunities that come with news content, CEOs as influencers, and what brands can learn from Bernie Sanders. If you like this episode, please leave me a comment and let me know what you think. Remember to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so that you don't miss an episode. Now, please enjoy the show. Patty, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
I'm so excited to have you on the show today. You are the director of custom content at Cranes New York.
That's correct.
So tell me a little bit about Cranes New York first, and then I want to talk about your role.
Okay, great. So Cranes New York is a B2B news brand that focuses on New York City, and it's a curated read. It is a weekly brand. The publication is printed on a weekly basis, and the website, which is 10 times larger than the print distribution, is obviously refreshed daily.
Interesting. How long has Cranes as a business been around? It's has some history.
It does. It is Crane Communications is 100 years old, and it is a private family-owned business that has a long and established history as a news organization. So it was built in Detroit in the automotive industry in the news, with the news focus. And they have about 50 B2B brands and four news brands, of which Cranes New York is one of the four. There's Cranes New York, Cranes Chicago, Cranes Detroit, and Cranes Cleveland.
And Cranes, I believe, also owns Ad Age.
Yes, they do.
And that's one that I'm quite familiar with being in the advertising industry.
Yes.
It's one that I, like early in my career and actually in school, we would often have articles from Ad Age shown to us at that time. So I knew the Cranes brand without knowing that I knew the Cranes brand.
Right.
At the time. So you are the director of custom content at Cranes New York. So tell me what that means.
So I was brought on board in 2015 to build a content studio. The company at large had already developed custom content, but not with the news brands. They had been more protective of the news brands. So I was brought on board. They had finally blessed or greenlit the fact that the news brands could explore in this area. Obviously, custom content is significantly different with a news brand because if you get too close to the brand and you damage it, that has huge complications and implications. Like, it's very different than working for Vogue. So when you work for a news brand, it's a lot more serious. So I understand that the family was much more protective of the news brands, but then they finally said, you know what, we're going to move forward with this. I was brought on board in 2015, and my role was to build a content studio. And when I first came on board, all that existed were print advertorials. And so I was starting from scratch. And the first area that I entered into was custom events. Custom digital followed. Custom research, custom videos, bit by bit. And then instilling best practices and hiring the right people, the designers and journalists. And the copy editors that I felt were really going to enhance the brand.
And was this the role that you dreamed of as a kid, went to school to? Was it a nice, clear path from beginning to end?
Not at all. In fact, going into custom content was completely random and yet suits me to a T, and I'll explain. I met the person who hired me at Cranes in a strategic meeting, and it was a great conversation. It was robust. We were brainstorming. I was sharing a lot of integrated marketing programs, which kind of are related to custom content, and I was sharing all of these stories with my future boss, and she hired me. So she asked me afterwards, would you like to have coffee? And initially I was like, custom content? No. I mean, I had been in the Latin market previously, and I had done concerts for Pitbull and red carpet events in LA, and I just didn't think that it was the role for me. But now I realize, looking back, that the mosaic that my career represents is actually a perfect fit for someone going into custom content, because you need to be very big picture and kind of understand a lot of different platforms. But initially I was very shy of it. I thought, no, that's not the role for me. So it took some talking, and it definitely wasn't something I was thinking about in college.
Right. Well, it sounds like you weren't even thinking about it until this meeting that you were in. So tell me about this. Tell me a little bit more about this meeting. It's a really interesting outcome. So where are you working at the time when you have this meeting?
So I was working at Latina, and that is it's a brand in the Hispanic space. It is now since gone. It was for acculturated Hispanic women. So it was a lifestyle, beauty, fashion title. And occasionally we would do content on entrepreneurship. And you may know that the Latino community over-indexes for owning a business. So we were approached by Cranes because they had an idea to create a Hispanic entrepreneurial program. And so, again, I showed up at the meeting. It was a great conversation. It was very lively and animated. That project did not lift off the ground, but the person in the room was my future boss. So I think she liked me.
Yeah.
So I was interviewing without interviewing.
Right. Well, I think that's the best way to interview, right?
Me too.
You had nothing planned. You were prepared.
That's right.
I'm always intrigued by these moments in our lives where, you know, you go to this meeting, and then you end up working at that place. If you don't go to that meeting, like your right. life takes a whole other turn.
That's right.
You have these little micro decisions that happen every single day.
Yeah.
And they can change the trajectory of a career in numerous different directions.
Yeah. Yeah.
So once you're on board at Cranes, you're already familiar with the brand.
I was loosely familiar with the brand. So similar to you, I was familiar with Ad Age and the news brand. I didn't read it on a regular basis, but I knew it had stature and clout, but it wasn't really something that I went to on a regular basis.
Yeah. And you mentioned that, you know, news and business news, maybe even more, is challenging when it comes to advertising and content. What do you mean by that?
So, you know, with a news brand, they are reporting on the news. They have to maintain absolute integrity. And the line between church and state is very, very serious. And you don't want to, because you're trying to craft something for a client, you don't want to inadvertently do something that would take away from the brand's integrity. And in custom content, we're nothing without our brands. If the brands have great brand equity, it makes our job easier. And our role oftentimes is to navigate and to kind of dance as carefully as we can to that line. So with a news brand, you have to be very, very cognizant at all times that this is a news brand. So I just need to be super careful and vigilant with regard to that.
Yeah, because I imagine the reason that brands are attracted to Cranes New York is because of this high level of credibility,
That's
journalistic
right.
integrity, impartiality, and the brand is wanting to leverage that in order to be able to communicate to people in a different way than they would be able to do themselves. They're, in a way, they're borrowing that credibility for a period of time to be able to reach that audience through your voice and lens.
Absolutely. Our clients, our sponsors, our partners all come to the custom content studio because they are looking to leverage the brand equity of Cranes New York business. I have to always be respectful and mindful of that the brand at its core has to remain pure and have integrity. And so it's very different. You know, I worked for many years in the consumer market, and I worked for some fairly lightweight brands like Latina. So if I got too close to the line at Latina, it wouldn't have the same implications or detriment.
Yeah, you could see that. It, you know, also if you were working at a, you know, recipe site, you know, the line between using Robin Hood flour or using a different flour probably isn't going to, break the credibility of that recipe.
It's not going to have long-lasting implications, and it's not going to feel like you messed with the gravitas of the brand.
Yeah. I see this across a lot of news brands, even from an advertising perspective. Especially right now, there's a diverse amount of political news out there. There's polarized topics. And so news isn't always brand friendly. Maybe with Cranes New York, it might be a little bit different with a business focus. But is there, as much as there's an attraction to a news brand from brands, is there also brands that want to stay away from that?
I would say that advertisers and partners are usually wary of politics. So Cranes has three core beats, commercial real estate, politics, and healthcare. And those are core beats. That doesn't mean we don't, write about anything else, but those are the core ones. And usually advertisers and partners are a little shy of committing to political content because they don't know which way the wind's going to blow and it could get them in some hot water. And yet that has to remain as part of the brand, but I tend not to be able to leverage that content, as you can imagine.
Well, it's this interesting thing where some of the content that gets a lot of the attention is really popular. People are sharing it and reading it. That's the, that's the one that's the most divisive or, the most polarizing. And I could see a brand, everyone's scared of the screenshot. They're scared of that screenshot where there's a news story and then their ad is next to it and it gets sent around. Even if that was just one impression served programmatically, It's still that screenshot that everybody's scared of. So I could see that. So, with anything, it's probably a positive and a negative. People are attracted to that. Yep. Having your pulse on the city, but also being a pulse of the city, it becomes a little bit difficult from there. I've seen politics have become a big part of the media landscape, both from an advertising and an editorial perspective. I'm Canadian, so I tend to watch. Most Canadians are pretty enthralled. Like, we watch U.S. politics more than we watch our own politics. I watch CNN all the time. I've been watching. I got into the primaries when Obama was being when he was in his first run in the primaries. That's when I first got into U.S. politics, and I had CNN on all the time, and I don't think I've shut it off since. I know that we see it maybe sometimes more as, we're distant from it, so we watch it as observers, but it has, U.S. politics have a huge implication on Canada. It's our largest trading partner. We are, in some ways, an extension of the U.S. in a lot of where we get our culture from.
We'll be back to the episode in just a few seconds. But first, we have some exciting news for you. At Pressboard, we love stories, but we know how hard it can be to measure them. So we're here to help, whether it's a sponsored article on a news site, an Instagram post from an influencer, or a video on YouTube. Our tech measures it all. Pressboard is already trusted by Spotify, Intel, NBC Universal, Hearst, and thousands more. And here's the big news. Listeners of the podcast can try out the Pressboard platform for free. Just email info@pressboardmedia.com right now. All right, let's get back to the show.
I'm curious if you have any thoughts on the political landscape. Right now, we're in a really intense area.
Yes, I do. I think one of the questions that you had sent as a possible question was, who's doing it well? And that was either about brands or personalities with regard to branding and content marketing. And I actually think Bernie Sanders is doing it well. But let me preface that by saying that I don't think you can do content marketing well if you're not doing your branding well. Like, it kind of marries together. And Bernie as a brand, aside from my politics, but yes, I do like him. But Bernie as a brand he's consistent. So there's that brand consistency, and you go back 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and he has remained true to his message. So you have that brand consistency. You also have the authenticity that he comes across as credible. And the storytelling is nuanced. Obviously, he's not telling stories, but there's an implied story that he's telling of the future. So I'm excited watching him. I don't necessarily agree with every single thing he says, but I think he is actually a good example of content marketing or marketing, and it might not be an obvious one, but he's telling a story of a possible future.
Yeah, I think that's a great comparison point to have, you know, a political figure as a brand, because if all it came down to was platform and issues, and it was specifically about that, we could all just fill out a form and say, here's what I think about all these things, and that's an algorithm right. could match us up with the right party and vote on our behalf. But there's people involved. And I think that same as a brand becomes this personality, and we might fall in love with that brand, and we want to see that they're consistent over time and that they come back on their promises. And we're seeing this in entrepreneurship we're at this stage where we're seeing these founders of companies now become under fire. We talk about WeWork. Mm-hmm. WeWork is this big company, but they're led by people, and those people are valuable. Mm-hmm. Away was under fire for a while because of some Slack messages that were in there. Like, there's all these things. I mean, they make luggage, right? So, and their luggage is good, and there hasn't been a problem with their luggage so far. But these companies are raising a lot of money based on these big mm-hmm. futures, and often based on these big personalities. And I think brands can learn a lot from maybe Bernie Sanders and this consistency of brand over decades of time.
That's right.
And maybe these political figures can also learn from companies and how they have these, you know, missions that'll last 100 years. I'm sure Cranes has had a similar mission over 100 years and has had to stay consistent to that along those way as well. So maybe both can learn from each other.
Yeah. One of the things that struck me recently about Bernie Sanders, and I think I saw him on a town hall, and he was given a leading question by a media pundit that said something like, so if you win in New Hampshire, and will you consider yourself a front runner? And he said, no. And I loved the honesty of it, the honesty, the credibility. He is really true to himself, and he's not interested in pretending, and he's humble. But I think his brand is all the stronger. So perhaps the right response would have been, oh yes, I'm definitely the front runner. But he said, no, not necessarily. But here's what, you know, and he went on within the context and talked about his vision. But I loved the honesty, because I think when you see a brand that's real and honest, it resonates, and there's something inside that you're like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it feels like it's not after short-term gain. It feels right. like there's this idea of, I have this direction I'm going in, and there's going to be people that believe in that direction, whether I'm a luggage company or I'm, you know, going to be president of the U.S. And I'm going to follow that, and I'm going to be consistent with that over time, so that you know what you will get from me 4 years, 8 years, anytime in the future.
And you're not going to get pulled into, he wasn't pulled into what he should say. And it's funny, one of the questions that that you had offered up earlier was, what would your advice be to somebody that wanted to get into content marketing? And my advice is, there's only one should. You should keep moving towards what you like. You should do that. You don't have to, I should be networking. I should be reading this periodical. I should be, you know, I should be on LinkedIn and it should look really excellent. Like, no, none of those. You don't need any of those. You should do what you like. Keep moving towards what you like. So that's the best advice. And no one gave me that advice. I just kind of figured it out. And I think that's luck on my part that I figured that out. But there's no other shoulds. There's no other.
I like that. I like the idea. Just because there'll be all these steps along the way. Careers are really long now, and they're going to be even longer. I don't see this, you know, you hit 65, you retire, because humans are just living too long, right? Like, if you retire at 65, what do you do for the next 45 years at that point?
That's a lot of gardening.
It's a lot of gardening. I'm not going to be playing golf that much. Golf has been too expensive for me to be able to do that. I've already thought about, you know, what am I going to do for 30 years if I'm not, you know, working or running a company. Mm-hmm. So I think you're starting to see this idea of careers for life, or this idea that, you know, work and life are becoming one thing. As much as we can talk a little bit about influencers, I think, you know, in the business news area, a lot of times you're looking to talk to influencers in a different way, probably not, you know, an Instagram influencer taking a picture, but more these CEOs and CFOs, and that's where there's a lot of influence. What I do like about the influencer movement is this idea that if you're in love with something, that it's possible to be able to sustain your life based on that passion. It doesn't mean you're going to be rich, but it might mean that if I'm really into gardening, I can garden 75% of the time, and I can do a podcast about gardening. I can do an Instagram feed about gardening, and maybe there's a way to monetize that in some way over time. And maybe I won't be a millionaire, but I get to garden for as much as I want, as often as I want. So I want to tie that back to cranes and this idea of influencers. Can you think of a campaign where, because I would see one big area that Cranes New York has access to are, you know, CEOs and business leaders. Yeah. Can you think of a campaign that leveraged that reach?
Oh, yeah. I worked on something last year with a banking partner. And the banking partner came to us with their situation, which they said their objective was to position themselves as thought leaders within the area of retaining, attracting and retaining talent. Very hot topic in New York City as well. Interesting topic. And they said that large companies, they have different resources. Smaller companies may be dealing with this in a different way, but middle market companies that are not tech focused and don't have that sex appeal are really struggling to attract and retain talent. And they said, we want to help those companies. And we want you to do a custom survey of your C-suite audience, of your business owners, of your middle market audience. Find out what those pain points are, cull the results into articles, and then we did a specific custom issue of Cranes, and then wrapped the content that came from the survey into a cover wrap and hand-delivered it to these CEOs of middle market companies. So that was leveraging our C-suite. It was one of my favorite projects last year because attracting and retaining talent, like, who can't relate to that? It's an interesting topic. I love research. It's one of my passion points. So I spent 5 years in research. And so I loved doing that aspect of it. And it was just, it was a really rewarding project to work on.
What I love about that idea is this, you're doing research, you're finding out some new insights, you're turning those insights into content marketing.
Yes.
And then you're serving it back to this audience of CEOs and business owners that are going to get new value from it.
That's right. And have actionable insights that they could take immediately.
Yeah. I love the idea of a business owner, a mid-market business owner, being able to take these insights, make some changes to their business. And this was all funded by an advertiser.
That's right.
The cool thing about branded content to me is this idea that there's budgets available to produce really interesting content that makes a difference in companies or people's lives. And it can be, sometimes it's a big deal, like, you know, how you're going to run your company. Sometimes it is a small deal, like a great recipe that someone cooks for their family.
Right.
But a lot of times what I've seen in media is because the budgets aren't as big, you know, there are journalists being laid off, the money has to come from somewhere. And sometimes that money can come from brands that help, you know, hire more writers and, you know, fund not only the custom content side, but that helps fund the business, which helps you hire more writers. So I think it's this really positive area that's closer aligned to the core business of a publication than banner ads would be.
Right. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that we've moved away from advertising as attributes or benefits. It's storytelling. And people want to be educated or inspired or entertained. It's funny, I was trying to remember something last night, a commercial, and it was a coffee commercial. And it was, I think it was Nescafe. And it was, I'm dating myself a little bit, you wouldn't know this commercial, but it happened in the 80s. And it was a couple that would come over to each other's apartment and serve coffee. And each episode was a cliffhanger. And it was all for selling Nescafe. But it wasn't selling the benefits of coffee or the attributes of coffee. It was making this really memorable, like, series of vignettes, and you wanted to buy that coffee.
Yeah, I remember this. I may not have seen it live, but I remember in school being a case study.
Excellent.
Because what was really interesting was people were waiting for the next commercial.
That's right, because they would end in a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
So I didn't study it in school. I actually lived through it, and I remember it as a consumer. I loved it.
Yeah. Well, it's this interesting idea that people relate to other people, and these, you could picture yourself like, what if I was one of those people in that couple? And then Nescafe comes along with it, because my cousin is a screenwriter, and she talks about this idea that the hero doesn't always have to be a person, and in another way, the brand can be a setting. So the brand doesn't have to be the hero of the story.
That's right.
It can be the setting, or it can just be a part of it. So Nescafe is, you know, each of these moments that are happening, sure, there's Nescafe there. It's like product placement.
Right.
But the brand can become a setting, or it can become the instigator of some sort of process. So in the banking example that you used, what they're doing is they're funding this idea of research.
To me,
that's the core, is we don't know the answer to this, and that means other people don't know the answer to this either. Let's find out what, you know, mid-sized companies are doing, and let's report that back out, and let's use our advertising budget to be able to fund that.
Right.
Super interesting.
Yeah.
I love that. So let's talk about the future of media. We've moved, you know, over your career and my career, I'm sure we've seen a lot of changes in what the media business looks like. What are we seeing over the next few years? How will media companies survive and thrive?
That's a good question. I would say they would certainly need to be agile. From a personal perspective, and maybe I'll see if I can kind of segue it to what a company, what perspective a company needs to take. But from a personal perspective, when I first got into advertising, I found it a very volatile business, and it was very fast paced. I worked at an ad agency when I first started, and if we won a big account, all of a sudden they were hiring in a frenzy. If we lost a big account, people were leaving or being shuffled around. So this industry has always been volatile, and it's always been fast-paced. Now there's an endless loop of learning. So it's almost like mastery is elusive, and it's a mindset. You have to be humble enough to be an apprentice again. And I can tell you, with my 30-plus years working, it's like, I've been an apprentice far more often than I thought I was going to be. I mean, I thought I'd be an apprentice in my 20s, and that's it. But it's the, I think companies probably could take the same perspective, which is remaining agile and recognizing the endless loop of new information, new processes, new best practices, new technology is not going to stop. So how do you manage that? And how do you keep people inspired and not scattered by that?
Yeah, I think the cycle of change in media is happening so quickly now. So you would have had, even with print, there was a decades of time where print just worked. And then you had this big shift to digital, and it felt like this one moment. But if you think about it, it's been like 25 years since digital really came about.
That's right.
So that change has been happening over time. It's not as drastic as we believe it is. And so I think what's changed is we used to have these big pivots. Even over the last few years, pivot to video. Just drop everything. We're just going to do video from now.
Right.
Pivot to paid. We're doing subscriptions now. Let's all move over to that. And I think we've realized that that just doesn't work. It's just too big of a bet when what you're trying to build is just a sustainable business that lasts over the next 100 years.
Right.
Yeah. It's super interesting. I've seen a lot of diversification around media companies, and I've seen kind of this, like you allude to, which is this apprenticeship mentality, this willingness to learn but probably fail at a bunch of things along the way.
Right.
I used to water ski when I was a kid, and I was really proud when I wouldn't fall. And my dad would always say, that's fine, but it just means you're not learning anymore. Because if you were learning, you'd still be falling.
Right.
And that really stuck with me. And
that's great.
I fell a lot water skiing. I don't fall as much anymore, which means I'm not learning. And I know I'm not learning anymore. Now I just don't want to fall. I'll fall in business instead.
Yeah.
But I think that's a really good point about this idea of being an apprentice, always learning.
So an apprentice mindset, I think, is really important. So I would apply that to both an individual as well as a company.
I love that. Well, I want to thank you for sharing not only your story about your career path, but about cranes. And I love that we were able to talk a little bit about politics in there as well. And before I let you go, I'd love to know, we do a book club and a movie club at Pressboard. And so I'm wondering if you have a recommended book or a recommended movie for us, one of your favorites.
I just saw 1917, which I loved. It was filmed in an unusual way. So I think Sam Mendes took a risk. I'm not a World War I or World War II buff, but this was a story. It was not a war movie per se. And I felt like it was filmed in a very interesting way. So kind of like Dunkirk, so similar, that there was some innovation in the storytelling. I really enjoyed that. And right now I'm reading a book that my new boss gave me. It's called Fish, and it's about positive thinking and setting intentions, and that comes fairly naturally to me, so I'm all in on that too.
I love it. Well, thank you so much. I've loved having you on the show. It's so nice to chat with you.
Thanks
for coming. Thank you so much for tuning into The Science of Storytelling. Don't forget to leave us a comment. We love hearing from you. We have a ton more episodes coming up this season with some absolutely amazing guests. So make sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so that you don't miss a single one. See you next time.